Okay, we're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. Welcome to everybody who is attending online and in person. And I guess we need a roll call. Who was doing that?
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Georgiana Schuster.
Here.
Kim Fisher. Vicki Nyswander. Ann Robin.
Here.
Okay, missing Kim. Hopefully she's on her way. We need to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in,
Revised.
oh yeah, there is a revised agenda.
I read the revised agenda and I couldn't really see what was revised, but I move to approve the revised agenda, whatever the revision is.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, moving on to we've got the timeline, we've got the acronyms and glossary, citizen input. Any of that? All right, anything from Zoom? I don't see or hear anything. So, moving on to my comments, I was just going to comment on all the work that the staff did, and apparently Susan on the strategic plan. A lot of work done on that, really clarifying it, making it much better for this next 3 years. Hi, Kim.
Kim, you're super.
Wait, that's his name.
That's
you're trying to get. I didn't move her, so she would be on.
Yeah. So anyway, appreciate all the work that the staff did on that and on everything that gets done between our meetings that we just kind of sit back and relax and wait for it all to happen. So thank you to the staff that worked on that. That's it for me. Lynn?
I can keep it brief. I'm also appreciating all the work of the staff and the agencies because we got, I think, for DDB funded agencies and then the mental health board funded programs and then the IDD special initiatives, we got all the reports done on time. Except there's just one exception, but that's kind of, we're working on that. It's CU Autism Network has had sort of stopped the program mid-year. So we're talking to them about what to do next. But otherwise, everything was on time. And now we're getting to look through the data, which is really like, I really like working on the next plan and the next priorities. But looking at year-end data is really cool. And there's sometimes there are little things that we notice that are really important to bring to your attention. So we're just at the beginning of that process. And I'm grateful to everyone for providing the details on time and everything looks pretty complete and it gives us a lot to work with. And I don't know, there's also a lot going on otherwise, but I think it's better to stop here and let the meeting roll. And I also want to appreciate Georgiana Schuster for hanging in there with us beyond her term. She, by statute and by the bylaws, she can continue to fill the seat until a replacement has been appointed. And I think the County Board actually has two highly qualified applicants right now for your seat. They just have not been able to appoint someone yet. So maybe by next week, maybe by October, but I really appreciate you continuing to work with us. And like, you really are there for us. It's not just coming to the meeting, it's like all of our communications. I'm gonna miss working with you.
Good. Thank you. You're welcome.
Okay, we need to next approve the minutes from July 17th.
I move to approve the minutes. Well, I was not here for July 17th. I was online, so maybe I shouldn't.
And you were sick, as I
I
recall,
had
too.
COVID.
Okay, I'll move to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
One at a time?
I think, yeah, yes. I'll second that. Any discussion on those minutes? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, then the minutes for July 31st.
I can move to approve those. I
Okay,
was
thank
here.
you. A second for that?
Second.
All those in favor of that?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, yeah, I always get the dud. Why is that? No, I just need to turn it so I can see the right stereo. No, that's not, it's fine. I can, it'll be fine. Where are we? Vendor invoice list, which starts on page 29. We need to accept.
So where do we ask questions?
During discussion. So do we have a motion?
Move to accept.
Okay.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, now questions.
Yeah, it's more curiosity question. Check to the Champaign County Treasurer for July 1 and August 1st for about $35,000. Is that rent or what do we pay the treasurer for? Oh, okay. Thanks. I was just curious.
Give me a second to look it up.
Oh, sure.
So, Susan, if it's
not critical,
it's at the top of page 31. That's August 1st.
And
then it's on the first page.
29 and 31.
Okay. So, I believe that that's the decision support PCP program through the Regional Planning Commission?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. It wasn't very descriptive.
No, that's a fun part of Chris's job too, is figuring out which of the treasurer, right? Like there's several accounts. They're not descriptive either.
Yes, unfortunately our wonderful ERP system is very descriptive in these reports too.
Okay, so any other discussion on that? Are we ready for a vote? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Moving on to staff reports. Any questions for staff? It's always impressive to me how engaged the staff are in all these different efforts around the community. If you've not had a chance to look at those, you'd be impressed as well, I think. So thank you for those. Anybody else have anything on staff reports? Moving on then to, yes.
I have a question.
No, I don't really have a question about staff reports. I just have a question about pages 46 to 51, which is financial reports. And I looked at it and can somebody elucidate to me what this is? Explain, please.
Did you have a specific question or just looking for a general overview of what
are
what
we looking at? How do I read this?
These are basically like profit and loss statements. So these are year to date, and it compares where we are compared to at this point last year, as well as where we are over the entire budget for the entire calendar year.
Thank you. It looks important, but I just I just had a little trouble figuring out what I was actually supposed to get out
this
of it.
This was a little confusing.
You want to summarize it, Chris?
The first time.
Well, sure. So looking at page 46, so that is the report for your fund, DDB fund. And that very first item, property taxes. So that's our main revenue stream is property taxes. And you can see, so it says actual 2024, the middle column, January through August. So that's year to date. And that's $2.9 million. That's how much has been collected. And you can compare that to the annual budget of estimated 5.1, right? So we're a little over halfway. You can compare that then in the first column, the actual 2023, we only collected 2.77 at this same point in time last year.
That's very helpful. Now I know how to look at it.
So now that you know how to look at it, this is something when Chris creates these for your board packets, and he'll sometimes create them at my request. This can be a bottomless pit. to me. Like, I'll start thinking like, oh no, where are the mobile home taxes? You know, like what's wrong? And anytime mid-year is probably the wrong time to freak out about stuff like that. But you know, sometimes I do see, like, it's interesting that we are ahead of where we were last year. The projection is also higher from, you know, from last year's projection. It was actually going to be a good year for increase. So we're right where we should be with revenues. And then it's really important for us to be tracking expenditures at this time of year, because the expo is coming. And Chris has to be very careful about where those charges get parked. And sometimes we don't have enough money in that line. And so that's another place where, like, I can kind of fall into the endless looking at this and asking extra questions. And so this time I tried to leave you in peace.
All right. I guess we're ready to move on to new business. And the draft strategic plan is on page 52.
I just had a follow-up question.
Oh, sure. Of course.
So I think in July, the actual 2024 January to August was zero. Like, we had no money had been deposited into the account. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. There was a delay in the treasurer's office. And far as distributing the funds, there's a calculation that they perform, which decides how much money goes to each county department. And they were having trouble with that calculation. I don't know exactly what the delay was. I don't know any more detail than that, but there was a delay, and that was stemming from that department.
And so, like, how much did we have in reserves available at that time? Because I think, you know, there was no necessarily movement at that time, at that meeting. I know.
Right. Off the top, I don't recall exact figures, but okay, off the top of my head, we had about enough money in reserves for about 2 months of payments.
Yeah. Yikes. Is it common that we would have to wait until end of July, early August for us to get this lump sum? Does it come monthly? Does it come at, like, in July 1? Or when can we expect, like, typically, if the calculations are all good, when would that money be dumped into the account?
Well, it happens after you make your property tax payments.
Okay.
So the first ones are due in May. So generally, within a couple of weeks of that, we've received our first distribution. So the fact that it went into July is certainly extenuating circumstances. It does not happen often. In fact, this is the only time I can recall that they've been that late.
Okay. So, but that's something we should be kind of keeping an eye on, at least when we're reading these reports, if the money is not getting deposited, not
correct,
dumped, deposited. Be the correct term, I guess.
Correct. And then the second installment of property taxes are the end of September. So then you'll see this number jump up again, probably October, November.
Okay. Okay.
When they make their second large distribution. There have been various smaller ones as late payments trickle in. They distribute those after the first installment. And then the second installment again will be in September, and you'll see a large distribution, and then it should change kind of gradually month to month after that as late payments come in.
Okay. And then just another follow-up. So am I reading this right? Like, our expenditures are 3.2 million right now, but we've taken in 2.9 million. Am I reading that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So hopefully that payment comes in on time, I'm assuming, right? If it's delayed, like, it was in the first installment, we could be in trouble.
It posed a challenge for us, for sure. And it's something that we will keep an eye on. We will try to keep in contact with the treasurer's office, do everything we can.
I guess then my next question, is there anything that us as board members should know about, should we be doing, would staff recommend for us to do?
Sure. I mean, I would recommend having more than 2 months of reserve. kind of 6 months is a good target.
And in terms of advocacy or speaking to, I mean, do we need to be communicating with anybody outside of this board, bringing it to the attention of Leah, or that's not necessarily...
The county board does ask. That's one of the questions we get every year when we're presenting our budget to them, is how come you have such a large fund balance? It's what looks like a large fund balance to them, but we've experienced firsthand this year the importance of having that fund balance, and 2 months is not sufficient in my opinion. The mental health board had even less; they didn't even have a full month's worth of operating. So my comment to them would be it's not even enough, let alone too much. Part of building that up, then I foresee, not allocating every dollar that comes in if you're trying to build up that fund balance.
Yes. Well, I would suggest that when we're making recommendations as a board, I know that the staff finalize any budget recommendations. There's always the tension and the pressure to fund as much as you can, because we don't typically have really poor applications. Most of them are good applications and with compelling arguments to increase the funding when there's an increase. And so, I don't think I was aware that we needed to have X amount of reserve. And I don't want to push for putting our budget at risk, either the county board saying, you've got too much of a fund balance, which they might misinterpret, or if for some reason the county is more than a month or 2 months late, jeopardizing any of the programs. So I would just ask that the staff remind us when we're at that point, because it's hard not to say yes. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, this was certainly extenuating circumstances. It doesn't happen very often, but we saw firsthand why it is important this year to do that.
It did happen a few years ago. I can't remember how many years ago, but there was a year when the DD board had not enough fund balance to make payments in the May-June payment is a double payment, because we don't issue a payment in May. We issue a double payment at the top of June. And at that point, there was not enough money in it. So the action that we asked the board to take was, it was a mutual one. We asked the mental health board to lend the DD board some money, and they did. And then it was when the deposits were made later, it was immediately transferred back. So that is, so really, like, this issue of what the fund balance goal is clearly spelled out in the documents that I provide to the county board, but they still ask the question every year. And I think that's okay, because we're really an outlier. Mm-hmm. What we do is very different from what other units of government do. Large fund balances do call, to the attention of people who feel tax stressed. So it's fair for me to give a public statement once a year about why it's like that, even if I think I wrote it really well. And then you all, we put it in the priorities memo too, about being careful about the fund balance. But despite care, this can happen sometimes, which is the wonderful thing about having two boards that work so mutually. Because, we might have come to you to ask you to lend money to the mental health board this year, but the clerk and the treasurer were able to complete the calculations in time and get the deposits made. It was very stressful, and I think we did let folks know what was going on, but we did not have to bring anything to you to do about it. But that's what we'll do if we get in a jam, because the first thing is making sure services don't get interrupted. Mm-hmm. So, and I also want to shout out to Leon Bryson, who went to the budget hearing for me this year. And I got immediately, two county board members told me he did a really great job. The next day, the budget director told me that. And then the county executive came down and told me that. So my idea is maybe Leon will always go and represent us to the county board. Congratulations, Leon.
Yeah. Thank you, Leon.
You're most welcome. And no, I'm going to defer to Lynn for that. Thank you.
Turned on here. Okay, so any other questions or comments on that? All right, then let's move on to the draft strategic plan, starting on page 52. And so we're not voting on this one today. It's just for discussion. What observations, questions, suggestions do you have for this? Like it, hate it, but yes. Susan.
Well, I was really pleased.
You have to turn it on.
Sorry.
You had it on before.
Now it's off.
Now it's off.
I pushed it.
It's on.
Thank you. I was really pleased when I read it. I mean, I think that we had some, if not changes, some clarification. And one of the clarifications that I liked was under objective eight, goal one, flexible service options, support flexible service options, such as telehealth. So just as a consumer of home-based waiver funds or as a payee recipient for my son, I really hate the fact that we can no longer use teleservices for personal support workers as individuals increase in their independence. And so in the past, I have personally paid one of the PSWs to be available by phone or Zoom when I'm not available for my son, and then I pay out of pocket because she doesn't, or he doesn't, need necessarily to drive to town to solve the problem, particularly when the problem's presented at 8 o'clock at night. And, you know, it often nips in the bud any issues that would come up. And no matter how many times I've called the IHDS program to say teleservices are important, they always revert back to bathing services and feeding services. And there's just this incredible disconnect between direct care provision and support. So anything we can do, I like seeing that in, you know, virtual and related training. I like seeing it in our objective statement. Anything we can do in terms of advocacy there, I think is critically important. I also like the idea under goal three, objective two, engage other funders and stakeholders to strengthen services. And one of the ideas that I've had this last year is I've struggled with special needs trusts and designating new trustees when family members have said, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. Is, you know, while I have good conversations with the agencies that support me and my son, there's no one who's really an expert on some of those issues. And as we're moving into more aging parents, and the need to set up sometimes state guardianships and sometimes, you know, backup guardianships, I just think we need more advice, more support than we have from our current funders. Or I think there's a place in here that might allow us to expand to that. And that might be under goal four, objective five, although that says using input from people who have IDDD. It's a significant support need when you're in danger of losing your guardian. It moves from just being, you know, an interesting issue to really a critical issue. So I just wanted to highlight those things and say I was really happy to see them in the plan.
And it would be nice if the state of Illinois would adopt some of these objectives as well, would it not? But yeah, we're not there yet. Any other comments?
Kim?
Kim?
Yes, so thank you. I really like some of the changes. One of the things I wanted to ask about is goal 8, so the community engagement and advocacy, and objective 6 about making information more accessible and user-friendly. I was wondering whether the board would be interested in including language around making our material or providing plain language versions of some of the materials that we have for folks. So that members of the community can understand the information more clearly, and certainly making it more accessible for folks with IDD who we serve. It's like a big ask. So it would be, you know, for every, you know, document or a series of information, we might have just like a one page plain language summarized piece of information that kind of summarizes the main points of the document. So like if we had the strategic plan, we might have a one pager that provides very simple language that outlines what's in the following strategic plan. That's like a government best practice through the federal government, and there's resources available to do that. I don't think that plainlanguage.gov, like there's resources of like what plain language is, how do you write it?
I mean, is there a service that would do that? Because
that was what,
okay.
No, right. So is it no? No. No. So then what I was going to say next is I think this would be a really great partnership with some of the advocacy groups that we're currently funding, if that is something they would like to help target, supporting our staff and supporting our board to help do that. I mean, I know it's a lot of work to ask of staff, but I'm just wondering if there's we want to help facilitate folks with IDD to participate in this advocacy and in civic engagement. So for them to help us create some of this plain language stuff, that would be potentially a thing. So
is it enough to simply add it to this objective or add another objective and then figure out how to do it?
It is a 3-year plan after all. It's not like we expect that
1-year objectives, but that doesn't mean, I mean,
that doesn't mean we have to do it right this minute.
We can set a 1-year objective, try and fail, and then do it again next time.
We could. We'd clarify it next time. But I think it would be good to add it as a separate. Yes, I do.
And would it be fair to say explore?
I think to be a reachable, attainable goal or objective as an IEP writer. Yeah, yes. Although that's not measurable. So yeah, so I take all that back.
I hope this is a friendly suggestion. Just append that to objective 6 instead of writing a new objective. Just say, for example, explore using plain language.
Just to share with y'all, like, this has been an explicit project of mine for years. Like, every time I do the priorities memo, I'm trying to make it more clear. It's so hard. I feel like it really does require a whole different human being. Don't you think? Like, these guys are like helping me with what we have, and they are pointing out errors and giving me information. So like an extra brain, or a group of, yes, input from someone other than our team, because we are really explicitly trying to, like, I got people making sure that it's correct and up to date, but we're trying. And it's just some of this stuff, yeah, like, I don't really know how to explain a statute without the kind of words that are really boring and we all get lost.
Vicky?
Yes,
okay. Well, no, you're sitting, you're looking at them because they're talking. I just wanted to get your attention to talk next. Having been on the mental health board a long time ago and been on this board for quite a while, I would say that the goal is being achieved as far as this, the material that's coming to us is about 1,000% more readable than it used to be, or 10,000% more readable. I mean, it is orders of magnitude more readable than it used to be. And the fact that this is in big print in our packet, and if you look at the online version, there's actually color involved. I think a huge effort has been made, and I just want to recognize that there's a lot of progress. Kim's pushing for another step, but huge progress. When I first came on the board, I was like, I don't know how to read this stuff. I mean, it's a completely different language, but it's been become much more accessible. Thank you.
It's like it's has much to do with how the focus has begun to shift finally to getting the opinions and the perspectives of people with developmental disabilities and intellectual disabilities, and now helping them to get more information, to have more educated responses. So it makes total sense to me.
Thank you all for this feedback. It really does feel important. And I appreciate all the input that we already get to make these things more readable and to make more sense. But yeah, this is a whole different kind of level and I like it. And we'll add an objective today and then we'll work on it tomorrow. Okay.
Perfect. And I would say, like, in terms of the IDD field, like, this is, even though, you know, the government has requested, federal government, plain language, the idea that you would integrate plain language in research summaries or journal articles is so new, at least in the IDD field. So, like, it is a little bit of controversy. It's controversial in, like, the major journals in IDD research. But a bunch of folks who are doing collaborative research with folks with ID are really pushing for it. So it'd be great. So we're on the forefront, I guess. So we're doing good. We can kind of join people on the forefront. So
excellent. Are we ready to move on to funding priorities? I'm not hearing any objections. Those start on page 69 in your packet.
Much smaller type. Sorry.
Much.
It's still very readable. We can blow it up on the screen maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't help me.
It's okay.
So comments, suggestions, observations on this?
I just have one comment, and I'm the one that didn't want to have a lot of discussion today, but we're having discussion anyway. On page 72, there's a little statement that I earmarked about our hopes and dreams for people with IDD and what the people really want. And I think we are making a big effort to try to find out what people really want, what people really need, because we need to make sure we make that connection. So I was happy to see that statement, because we might go, oh, well, this looks like a really great program, but on the boots on the ground, you need to find out what people really need. For example, telephone availabilities for support at 8 o'clock at night, funding something like that, people could really, really use. And then the other thing that came through to me in this kind of overall is we're funding what we can fund, and it's not enough, and it's not anywhere near enough. And so advocacy with other departments, for example, transportation, we can't, I mean, some people are providing some transportation, but it's not enough. What we need is a real transportation system that really is accessible for people, for example.
Anything else? Yes.
I think that's one of the reasons I also really liked the priority of advocacy and linkage, and the fact that you're putting those two together, because we need, for instance, Community Choices Transportation System, because the MTD doesn't provide transportation after 5 p.m. for individuals who need disability accessible transportation. So part of what we need to be doing, or our community needs to be doing, maybe we just push the community, is advocating with the MTD. Because as long as, and I'm wholeheartedly in support of the transportation that's being provided by some of the agencies, but I don't want it to end up supplanting in any way future transportation options that we could advocate for. And I'm sure that the agencies are aware of that too. It's just, you know, now I've heard from some people, well, we don't have to worry anymore because, and that's really not true because the money might not always be there. And actually, the more people have transportation options, the more they realize they need it, particularly after hours. I also just wanted to add under the advocacy and linkage, it's finally come to me over, I don't know, 10 years of being on the mental health board and now on the DD board, that we've actually succeeded in getting many people to a point of almost independence, but we don't always acknowledge that they still need some level of support to maintain or retain that level of independence. So just acknowledging that in the priorities. So on page 75, and I'm being a little repetitive, but you say to ensure that individuals who have almost become independent and have can maintain their trajectory. And then you list some of the things that I was really concerned about. So I think that's great because we have to think to the future because we are successful. We're so much more successful than we might have ever thought we could be. So that we do have people now who, you know, they qualified for PUNS and for home-based waiver services when they were younger. And it's not that they don't still need some of those services, but maybe not as much. And so we need to be assisting them in moving forward and not saying, well, they're not really disabled anymore. And I, you know, I've been told that a couple of times. Well, they don't really fit the criteria. They can do so much on their own. And, you know, I'm not pointing fingers. It's just, yeah, and the reason this person can do so much is
because of the support that they receive.
This person has received to become more independent.
Yeah. Completely agree. Go ahead, Kim.
Can you all remind me, I think there was one priority last year that wasn't addressed or there were no applications for, is that right?
It's this one. It was self-advocacy, which is why I thought we learned, and we kind of knew this already, that through some of the other funded programs, you are supporting self-advocacy groups that are doing a lot. Like they're doing system advocacy, like, but it's not the title of the program. So it kind of, it's not easy for us to just instantly know that, and they had to choose which priority to, you know, they can only select one priority, so they were not choosing self-advocacy. So for a few years, you had nothing under that. You had last year a couple of programs through the Autism Network, but they were unable to fulfill the requirements. So, so I thought maybe we should combine these two things and also say that wherever there's linkage and coordination, at the middle of that should be self-advocacy. Like that, like if we're really going to do person-centered planning, that's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, regardless of the model, people have implemented some very sophisticated models, but the key is the self-advocacy piece. So I do not think this combination of what was the priority self-advocacy and then the other priority linkage and coordination is going to solve the other problem, because I think the self-advocacy groups you're funding right now are under community life. So it doesn't really solve that technical problem of not being able to choose, but I wanted to put self-advocacy somewhere like that it was especially meaningful, but I want to also say that it belongs in everything. And that, so that's why there's more paragraphs about this priority and the others are much more brief because they all depend on this one. And also just to say that some of the things y'all have pointed to in this memo were written by other people. And I just want to like shout out to the power of collaboration and input. Yay. So,
Lynn, can I just quick follow up? So is there a reason why folks can't select like the first priority And then like a second priority. Okay, what's the reason?
It's very difficult to monitor a program that does 50 million things. It's almost impossible. And it's kind of, the idea is like, can we keep the program sort of focused on one thing? And that's very hard. The agencies are not really able to do that, to submit separate applications for each component of a program. So they're kind of meeting us halfway. And it, like, we can't, there is a place where you can say this program does meet another priority that's listed, but it doesn't trigger that as the main priority. It's just, it's right under the selection of priority. You can say if it fits with others. So we're trying to give some consideration to that because we know they're trying and we're trying too. It's just the more complex a program becomes, the more it's like a revenue enhancement contract, which is in the past, that is not what the DD board members had wanted us to be doing. That if the tide is turning, then we can go to revenue enhancement contracts and just say, here's a whole bunch of money for your agency, do good work. That's, in some communities, that is good government. In this community, we're putting so much money into community-based services that it might not match the expectations of the public and the appointing body. So I don't know. Okay.
Anything else? All right, then we will move on to old business. And first up is Engage Illinois. I did get a update from Sharon Constable yesterday, and she said that the group is now working on a charter and also developing a request for funding, which has been promised by the Developmental Disabilities Council. But they just have to work out the details. I don't know what the funding request looks like. I haven't been involved in that, but they are moving forward, and the number of organizations and people involved is growing considerably. So that's very hopeful. Evaluation capacity building project update. Do we have somebody online who's going to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, good morning. It's nice to see everyone. Yeah, so we've been making great progress for the technical assistance on the evaluation of capacity building. And so we've been working with four agencies to work on things like developing surveys, evaluation plans, ways to track qualitative data that are sort of capturing the stories of the work going on. We're continuing to meet with the working group. We're currently rescheduling our standing meeting. And so it looks like we are good to go to continue with that working group. And we are also continuing developing trainings related to program evaluation. And we are putting together a workshop right now related to identifying outcomes and finding measures of outcomes that can be people from the local agencies can participate in that to develop that skill as well. So that's a quick rundown. I'm not sure if Jacinda wants to add anything. I think she's still on as well, unless she had to. Yeah.
Hi, everyone. No, that's great. That's what our lineup is for fall, and we're working on some things for spring, but more to come on that.
Okay, any questions from the board? No? Thank you very much for all your work.
Thank you. It's been fun.
All right, moving on to the Disability Resource Expo. You've got some information in your packet. I just want to say this will be the first one since the beginning of the Disability Resource Expo that I will miss because of I am having surgery early October. So that's sad. It was a great event. I wish I could be there. Next up,
I don't think there's really any updates. I know they extended the exhibitor registration deadline to this Friday. And then the ads in your packet are those that I believe are going on buses. So they look really good and they look really small, but they will be blown up very large to go on the back and the sides of buses. I think the volunteer request list will be coming out very, very soon. And this year, they're doing a fashion show in collaboration with Maurice's, maybe. I can't remember who that's in collaboration with. But it is a it's going to be for like disability friendly clothing, and they're doing an exhibitor hour ish before. So before the expo is open to the public, so the different exhibitors can walk around and gather information. I'm still a little bit confused. I guess if you only have one person, then maybe your table goes unmanned. I'm not sure how that's going to work. This is the first time they've been doing it, but some of the feedback from exhibitors is that they don't have time to go around to gather information, so they are offering that this year. I don't think there's anything else.
You know how many exhibitors they have so far, roughly? Is it
maybe around 60 right now? I believe that the press release, I think they said up to 80. So mm-hmm. I think that's one of the reasons why
they extended
the deadline, because I do think we are a little bit low. I'm not positive because I haven't checked probably since late last week to see how many people had registered. So we might be closer to 80 at this point.
Yeah. Anything else on that? Thank you. Where are we? Fourth quarter reports and data. 91 to 110. Any questions or comments on that?
I just have a comment, and I don't want to add to the workload of the staff or our workload reading. But, you know, it's interesting. I like to see it, but because I don't know how close we are to the cumulative.
You're not adding. We're working on that. We do that at the end of every year.
I know.
In a separate document. It just takes a little extra time to put it in this when we're already creating it for next month.
I almost wish that I didn't have this, because I end up looking at it and saying, well, I'm so happy that the DD board community service report for, you know, the first one that's on page 92, that their target's 25 and they added new clients. But what does that mean in terms of how close they are to their target? And so, I mean, you know, I don't mean to be picky at all.
We had a discussion.
And I know that we'll get that at the
end
of the year.
We decided not to include it. I'll let Kim
I can do it. Okay. It's really, I mean,
I don't want to
yes,
add
it
more
is
work.
Extra work, but it's not that much extra work uh-huh. that it, like, would be so taxing. I can't do it every quarter. I just wasn't sure on this one because I am working on the document for October. So I was like, well, do I, but it's not an issue as long as I don't forget. Hopefully, like, it'll be ingrained in my brain now to just drop those on the bottom. There, it's
It'd
not
be
that
another line, yeah.
To copy and paste it okay. over, so I can do that.
Okay. Again, it's almost to the level of micromanaging, which I don't want to do. But my curiosity is always piqued when I see a big number, and you know, if it's 9 by 4, then hey, they've done 36. When I multiply four quarters. So again, I don't want to micromanage, but I almost don't want to look at it, because until I see the actual performance at the end of the year, I don't know if it means they're doing well or not.
And it also, it depends on the program. Like, I don't want to see big numbers in the last quarter. If it's a program that you've been paying the same amount for every quarter, and they didn't take on clients till the last quarter, nobody here is doing that. You guys are great, but it has happened before.
Okay.
So I understand what you're saying. We just made this explicit decision. Kim said it won't take me any time. I said, oh, don't worry about it. Let's focus on October, because
yeah.
we want to bring you those kind of like overviews of what we find, because this is so fun to have.
Well, it is, but it may overwhelm new board members when they join. And, you know, this packet is what, 100 pages, 124 pages. Again, again, I don't want to micromanage. It's just a thought. Okay. No.
You can do that.
Okay. And honestly, I'm glad you look at the numbers, because I'm more interested in the comments section. So I'll cover that. I think, you know, those are the things that I really learn from. So we need both perspectives. That's for certain. Anything else on the fourth quarter reports. Okay, moving on. Fourth quarter claims data, starting on page 111.
This is full year program year 24. This is the entire program year 24 data, not only fourth quarter.
Okay, got
it. Oh, great. Okay.
So do we have any comments on that? Any questions? I think this always makes it very clear to me. So I don't have any.
All of this leads to probably my biggest project of the year, which I won't give to you guys until probably March. I think I always present it to you either in February or March, right before you go into your biggest project of the year of making decisions, but where I break it down even smaller than this. So I pull out 10 or so clients to show you the array of the services that they actually received during the previous year, so during program year 24. So this will all be broken down a little bit more. It's kind of scary to think about it because it's so much, so many lines of data.
Mm-hmm. Look forward to seeing it.
Like it's like 88,000 lines of data, things like that.
Too many.
I really value that. I also want, again, thank the agencies for consistently providing this data. I think we do. I get so much out of that February or March report that Kim creates because it's not always a surprise, but it's just good to see how people utilize services. And there's a lot you can do with that. You can say if we offered more of this type of service, would they not rely on three agencies at once? Like there are just so many different ways to use those right when you're making decisions about what to fund next. And it is complicated to put together, but I really like it. And there are never surprises. People who have been very independent for a long time and may not be as plugged into services as they had been sometimes have a medical event, and then we see them all over the place,
yeah,
like lots of hours. And so that's one of the best things about this claims data is we can understand kind of what's going on, and then we can ask for more details. So.
All right. I think we are at successes in agency and other agency information. Anybody have anything they'd like to share with us this morning?
Hi, I'm Becca with Community Choices. I just wanted to share a little bit about at the end of July and early August, we had visitors from Queen's University in Canada come down and train our data collectors for the Balancing Act project that we're participating in. And this was, it was a really, I can't remember, I may have talked about it last month, but so essentially we help them sort of identify some of our family members as well as our members with disabilities who would be the people sort of actually collecting data for their research. And that training was over 3 days. And we worked with them to try to make it accessible to everybody in the group. Georgiana was one of our data collectors, so she can probably speak to it as, you know, and someone who experienced it. But they're almost through doing all of those interviews. I think there's a few left, both on the parent side as well as on the self-advocate side. And in that process, we've been talking with them, and they were really excited to be able to train some self-advocates to be doing that work. And they're actually going to be working on a second paper, sort of talking about their experiences with that. And hopefully having those individuals be co-authors on that paper, which is really exciting. So they're still kind of putting that together at the moment. But we're really excited to kind of just kind of see what comes out of some of those interviews. They'll be writing up essentially like a case study to share with us and kind of then continue on sort of talking with us sort of after that, doing some focus groups and hopefully providing some insight into ways that the people's experiences with community choices and with services locally can help to inform advocacy and work here, as well as statewide and elsewhere. So that was really the big update. We've also had just kind of a just a sort of one of the sort of like little successes or sort of unexpected successes. We'd been working with a young man kind of freshly out of school in our employment department. And it was a little bit of a rocky start in terms of his just being able to engage with the process and kind of like understanding sort of that shift in what's expected in just a community setting versus a school setting. And he got hired for it was a temporary position, but out at Curtis Orchard, and he's doing just like fabulously. And like they are really being extremely supportive of him, and really just took the attitude of like, no, he can do this. It's fine. Get away from him. We don't need you. Which is, you know, like exactly what we would love to see from all employers. It's like really taking on the job of being his advocate and being his support person, but also really believing that he can do it on his own. And so far that has absolutely been the case. So it's been a really, really nice thing to see. It's been kind of it took a little while to get there, but it's always nice to have that kind of positive outcome. So that's it.
Thank you. Paula?
Pains. We may want you. Sad. Show a consumer. Found a pit. Personal support worker for 1 hour a day so that good and we are having a open house on October. Sold from 10 to 3 p.m. So please come. We are located in Lincoln Square. Lashana Shield from Palau in the chat. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. So that was, just make sure I have it clear, October 3rd from 10 to 3 p.m. Open house for just your program or for PACE?
Pains.
Okay, super. Thank you. Any questions?
You're welcome.
Anybody else? Yeah. I think probably that has something to do with it. Is it because of the new location at Lincoln Square?
What? I think in 18 week or week that week, and yes, we did move, but because of that 18 week.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anybody else?
I was trying to find out how to raise my hand. I'm so sorry. I can't see it. I'm LaShonda, and I just wanted to add to this also a couple of particular to our program. We've also participated at PACE. I'm sorry, I guess I should have introduced myself. I'm LaShonda Hall, and I'm the PAPSW specialist here at PACE. And in addition to what Paula said, and to answer your question about the reason for the open house, partially it is because of the new location, and also we've added a couple of different services here at Pace, which include home modifications, et cetera, and those things are also helpful to our consumers. And we also participated in the Champaign County, the job fair at the Champaign Library this week. And we've had 40 potential people sign up for the orientation. And we've been trying to make ourselves more visible in the community. So we're kind of, you know, just doing what we can do to help our community.
Sounds good. Thank you. You want to go ahead?
Sarah Perry, Director of Residential Services at DSC. I just wanted to speak to our newly formed partnership with Chris Healthy Aging. They are an entity that reached out as they have received a grant for specific to IDD population and dementia. And so we recently had myself and the direct support specialist at DSC attend the 8-hour course for becoming a certified dementia. So both Sarah Roper and I are now deemed with those credentials, and we will be working together with Chris to be doing some assessment of individuals 40 or older in our programs, to see if there is a possibility of dementia, and then collaborating with them on best tools and tips to prolong their ability to live independently in group homes for the community for as long as they can. So we're really excited about it.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else? I see no one jumping up, so I guess we'll go ahead on the agenda. County board input. No Leah today, though. I saw she made the newspaper this week. Well, it depends on your perspective, I guess. She spoke up at a county board meeting, so not DD related. So we'll move on from there. Mental health board input.
The mental health board is meeting this evening. They have similar items to yours, but they have to do a fund balance transfer. So I know. So like normalize fund balance transfer requests. There's, you know, in the past, it's been complicated because it wasn't clear who has authority to authorize fund balance transfers, but the statute governing the mental health board's work has been clarified. It is them. We were going to ask them to transfer some money in order to meet a gap that we did not expect, but we kind of had predicted, and that is related to withholding payments when we have substantial agency client or agency compliance issues, we just hold payments. But there have been cases where the mental health board is ends up holding payments for a year. So that this created a surprising gap in their budget. So that's the big news tonight. And then they have a very long informational memo with a possible decision at the end about a late audit. But the informational memo collects a whole bunch of history on the rules around the audit requirements and the actions taken. So it was a really interesting exercise. I did not share it with you all because you have not been facing the level of financial accountability issues that they have. But the good news is I know how to do this now. And the staff helped so much. Like everybody had information to contribute to this. So if we ever find the DD board in a bind like that, I think I know better how to support you all if you have to have a public discussion about something really hard like that. So I learned, and there, you know, it debuts tonight. We'll see how it goes. Otherwise, the meeting is very similar to this one.
Thank you. Are there any announcements from the board?
So I don't know if do you know, but Chris Wilson is a 40 under 40 in the News Gazette.
Oh,
So
my
let's give a
goodness.
round of
Okay.
applause to Chris. Very excited for you. It's really exciting. Thank you for all you do for our boards. It's really helpful. So, yeah. And then I just wanted to say the county clerk and the recorder's office has a new program around striking restrictive covenants. Is not the board related. So striking restrictive covenants in different areas in Champaign County. So you can go to their website to actually, it's really easy to do. You type in your address and you can see if your property and the area around you is actually under a restrictive discriminatory covenant. And then it's super easy. You can contact them to strike that, and they have you fill out a form. You send it to Tony Caesar over at the recorder's office. They get talked to Julia Reitz's office. They sign it, and then it's done. So it takes one person in the neighborhood to strike the restrictive covenant from your area. So I did it in the where I live, and it's super easy. So there's 18, or there's 19. Now there's only 18 left. So talk to your neighbors, put your own address in, and let's
What's
get
that
them.
website again?
It's gosh, if you'd look at, I don't know if you go like Champaign County Clerk restrict comma restrictive covenant. If you Google that, you'll find it. And it's just like at the bottom of that website, there's a place you can click and put your address in it. So
Interesting.
yeah, it's or email me and I or email the clerk's office. You can, but
I have a covenant story I can tell someday, but not today.
okay. Yeah. So it's an important thing. So I'm just trying to share anywhere I can. If folks can strike it, that would be really great.
Sounds good. Anybody else? All right then. We have one more thing on the item on the one more item on the agenda that is under closed session. So, is Joel Fletcher here? Okay. Board staff and attorneys request that the board continue to maintain as closed the minutes of closed sessions held February 19th, 2020, February 26th, 2020, and July 21st, 2021, and February 23rd, 2022, which have been distributed for review. For discussion, the board may move to executive session, exception 5 ILCS 120. 2C11 of the Open Meetings Act to review status of minutes of prior closed session meetings and that the following individuals remain present: members of the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board, Executive Director Canfield, and Associate Director Kim Bowdrey. If this motion is approved, those authorized will move to Brookins Meeting Room 3 for roll call and discussion. When the closed session discussion ends, they will move back to the Shields Carter Room for a motion to return to open session and new roll call. Once the open session is reestablished, the recommended action is to accept the February 19th, 2020, February 26th, 2020, July 21st, 2021, and February 23rd, 2022 closed session minutes as presented or revised to continue maintaining them as closed and to destroy the recording of the July 21st, 2021 meeting. Well, that was quite something.
So you kind of made the motion.
I kind of did. So we just need a second.
Yeah.
Second.
Okay, thank you, Kim. So thank you all for coming, and we're going to be leaving, I guess.
I guess you have to just vote on the motion. Like a roll call those.
Oh yeah, a motion that to go into executive session. Okay. So all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And any opposed? Okay, we are in closed session.
We have a special room so folks can so Chris can stay here and
Most, I have a motion. Oh.
We're going to reopen our meeting. So do we need a motion and a second for that? I assume we do.
I'll motion to open Thank the meeting. You.
Second. Thank you, Susan. And so we're back in open session and...
Do you have voice vote
too? Oh, yeah. Voice vote would be good. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Here, I think. Okay, so I'll read the motion to accept the February 19th, 2020, February 26th, 2020, July 21st, 2021, and February 23rd, 2022 closed session minutes as presented, to continue maintaining them as closed and to destroy the recording of the July 21st, 2021 meeting. I need a second.
I will second that.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. I believe we are adjourned.